Okay, excerpts of the 14 rules. So, in our addendum, in my notes, you will find a listing as Father Gallagher translates them of the 14 rules for the discernment of spirits. And it's summarized by him, and it's a conference handout. I am just so impressed with his generosity of freely sharing. You don't have to spend one dime if you did not want to or were able to know this material. He makes it so easily available. And I really commend him for that. Okay, excerpts of the 14. All right. So Ignatius defines his audience, rule one and two. Persons who are going from mortal sin to mortal sin. And I bet you he would have seen a few of that in his earlier life. Goodness knows we all do. Today, it's not hard to find. But then there are those persons who are moving from good to better. So how the spirits, both good or evil, affects the person depends on whether they're just going around mortal sin or whether they're striving to be better. Rules 3 and 4 are where he defines his terms. And that's any good theologian is going to let you know who is the intended audience and what does he mean by certain terms. And he's talking about, of course, spiritual consolation, spiritual desolation, as opposed to other types of consolations, such as physical or psychological. And then rules 5 through 9 take on a special emphasis of spiritual desolation, because that's where many on their journeys to God will abandon them. It's when you're on top of the mountain, you're in the seashore, you're looking at the constellations. Oh, there's a God, there's a God, there's a God. But maybe when your son's in the hospital, not so much. All right. Okay. That's where it starts to become hard. So let's take a close look at rule 8. And then that'll be one of my excerpts. And then Sarah has hers. And by looking at rule 8, we're going to pull in some of the other rules to understand it. So Father Gallagher writes, to be patient and work contrary to negative movements. Let one who is in desolation work to be in patience, which is contrary to the vexations which come to him, and let him think that he will soon be consoled, diligently using the means against such desolation, as I said in the 6th rule. So we first off note, we're going to work. So we're in a desolation. So like Sarah said prior, we aren't just masochistic here, but there's something for us to be doing. And we have this tremendous expectation of soon, which can almost at first seem like Ignatius is rather presumptuous. How do we know this is soon going to be over? What does soon mean? And diligently use means against it. Faithful patience will not surrender in trial. And it actively persevered knows the trial will pass soon and peace of heart will return. So Ignatius refers back to the 6th rule. The type of change needed is a prayer petition. So we're in desolation. So we're not to make changes with big decisions in our lives, but we are to make some types. And these would be to change ourselves by insisting upon more prayer, meditation, examination of ourselves. Oftentimes, you know, the troubles we're in is because of the troubles we did, or that the good Lord wants to teach us something, Or perhaps we are struggling with pride and need humility. But whatever it might be, we need to have some time and reflection, which Ignatius will call examination. And then in some suitable way of doing penance. Yes. The fifth rule, never make a change. In times of desolation, never make a change, but be firm and constant in the proposals and the determinations in which one was the day preceding such desolation, or in the determination in which one was in the preceding consolation. Because as in consolation, the good spirit guides and counsels us more, so in desolation, the bad spirit, with whose counsels we cannot find the way to a right decision. And then finally, let us work on this presumptuous word of soon. So Father Hampsch, John Hampsch, he wrote, the key to the heart of God is faith. And we can liken faith to trust or confidence. The divine mercy image says, Jesus, I trust in you. It doesn't say I love you, which it could have, or I admire you, but trust. This childlike expectation, full of confidence, always moves the heart of God sooner rather than later. I could stop there, and there's some more rules to pick up, even within this one.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the beauties, I think, of the spiritual directions, right, is that these spiritual exercises or these rules of discernment, they're each individual points that one can practice on its own, and yet the interwovenness, right, there's really a very subtle clarity that you gain from the interweaving of these individual rules. Obviously, it's best to learn them individually so that you can understand each one of them on their own. Like, for instance, when you were talking about at the very beginning, the soul that is moving away from God, as opposed to the soul that is moving toward God, we have to remember that that angels, when they were created by God, were all given specific gifts that was part of their angelic makeup. You know, we don't know what each individual angel was given, but we do know that they were each given an individual gift, because angels are their own species, right? There's no interfamily relationships of angels. And so consequently, all of those gifts that were given to them, they did not lose when they fell. So all of those gifts that were supposed to be at the service of our Lord have now been put to the service of themselves. And so it becomes very, very easy for a demon, when a person is engaging in mortal sin, to give them the appearance of consolations, right? They're oh, this feels so good. Oh, this is so nice. And yet at that very moment, it's essential for your guardian angel to give you a sense of some level of desolation, right? To make this mortal sin sting a little bit. Whereas then when you become that person who is moving away from desolation, and moving away from mortal sin and into a life of grace, then your guardian angel will give you all of those holy consolations. But the angels, the demons who are very disappointed in the fact that you are now moving towards God, will fill you with intense desolations, right? So this little natural interweaving, even of the angels themselves, as they attempt to manipulate our status, as it were, right? What they demons want to keep us moving towards Satan, and our guardian angels want to keep us moving towards God, but they're going to use their gifts like in the exact opposite manner, so as to either prod us or entice us to do what their will is. And thankfully for us, our guardian angel's will can only be the will of God. But a demon's will can be his own. And, you know, some of them are quote unquote nicer than others. You know, maybe your demons won't make you do terrible, awful things. But, you know, there are some that they're awful, and they will make you do really terrible things. You know, you'll fall, and then you'll wake up one day and wonder, how did I get here? Right. So that would be my only point, is just this beautiful elegance of this interwovenness of these rules, but also the ability to engage with them really, truly one-on-one, because you can't, once you learn them, you can't unlearn them, right? It really is a profound gift. You will never see things in the same manner once you understand this movement of, I don't know, silent movement or an invisible movement of grace that is going on to assist you to get to heaven by your angels or to take you to hell.
That's right. All right, my friends, we'll pick up in the next episode. Till then, fides, gratia.